bliss of the purified, bliss of the free. I glance in the crimson light open for me, for sin and uncleanness exalting our stand, and point to the print of the nailed in his hand. Oh, sing of his mighty love, sing of his mighty love, sing of his mighty love, mighty to save.
Greetings, friends. This is J.C. Yoakum with Hymn Time. It's good to be able to take a few moments of time and listen to hymns of praise to God. Psalms 147, verse 1 reads thusly, "Praise ye the Lord, for it is good to sing praises unto our God, for it is pleasant, and praise is comely." In a day when many have lost sight of the greatness of God, when some indeed say that God is dead, the old hymns of faith are especially useful in helping us to render the proper praise to His holy name. We hope each one listening today will feel a spirit of praise in their heart. Philip Doddridge was born in London, June 26, 1702, the son of an oil merchant, and he was a nonconformist minister. He became pastor of the Congregational Church at Northampton and principal of the Theological Academy there. Philip Doddridge wrote many hymns. Most of them have been altered, yet they are so thoroughly excellent in spirit that they are indispensable to any collection of sacred verse. They belong with the deepest experience of Christian life and can never be omitted or neglected. Dr. Doddridge's hymns were circulated in manuscript during his life, but were not printed until 1755, which was 4 years after his death. This may account for many changes that have been made in his hymns. To know that Dr. Doddridge lives very close to God, one has only to read the words of his hymns. But to further prove his devotion to God and the kingdom here, we read a portion of a letter written by Dr. Doddridge to a friend while he was studying for the ministry. Dr. Doddridge wrote, "Here I stick close to those delightful studies which a favoring providence has made the business of my life. As for the world about me, I have very little concern with it. I live like a tortoise shut up in its shell, yet I live like a prince, not in the pomp of the greatness, but in the pride of liberty. I can willingly give up the charms of London, the luxury, the company, the popularity of it, for the secret pleasures of rational employment and self-approval. So instead of considering this my misfortune, you should congratulate me upon it as my happiness, seeing it gives me so much, many valuable advantages to the most important purposes of devotion, and I hope I may add, usefulness too." This letter was written in 1720. Later in 1742, he wrote the following letter to his wife. "I hope, my dear, you will not be offended when I tell you that I am very easy and happy without you. My days begin, pass, and end in pleasure, because they are so delightful. I often think of you, and pray for you, and bless God on your account. I please myself with the hope of many comfortable days, weeks, and years with you, yet I am not anxious about your return or anything else. The reason is that I have more of the presence of God with me than I remember ever to have had. He enables me to live for Him and with Him. It is pleasant to read, to compose, to visit friends, to preach the gospel to poor souls, and pleasant on weekdays to think how near another Sabbath is. But oh, how much more pleasant to think how near eternity is, and that it is but a step from earth to heaven." This glimpse into the very heart of Philip Doddridge makes us appreciate much more his great hymn, one of which we hear now, "Grace, 'Tis a Charming Sound," done by a group from Mars Hill Primitive Baptist Church in Edison, Georgia.
Grace,
Roger!
On March the 29th, 1788, friends gathered at the bedside of 80-year-old Charles Wesley. He had preached his last sermon at London City Road Chapel. Returning to England from Georgia in 1736, where he had been secretary to Governor Oglethorpe, Charles Wesley with his brother John began in earnest their religious crusade. In half a century, John Wesley, 4 years older than Charles, traveled a 250,000 miles and set England afire with 40,000 sermons. Mild-mannered Charles Wesley set the Christian world singing with 6,500 hymns. Charles Wesley wrote perpetually. Many was the time he stopped at houses along the road to ask for a quill and paper, that he might set down verses he had composed in his mind while writing from mission to mission. At 39, he wrote Love Divine, All Love Excelling, and at 41, Oh, for a Thousand Tongues to Sing. Hundreds lay in between, and thousands followed. Now on his death bed, he sung Isaac Watt hymn, I'll praise my Maker while I've breath, and called for pen and paper. He wanted to praise his Maker with yet another hymn poem. When pen and paper were brought to his bed, Charles Wesley was too weak to write. As his wife took down the lines, he began, In age and feebleness extreme, I'll praise, and died with his last hymn poem unfinished. Publishing a selection of his brother's works, John Wesley pleaded in the foreword that critics not tinker with the poems because, he said, they would be unable to improve either the sense or the verse. That plea was ignored, and Jesus, Lover of My Soul, was tinkered with for over 100 years. Critics now concede that the original cannot be improved upon, and the hymn is sung today just as Charles Wesley wrote it. Many nice stories have been invented about the writing of Jesus, Lover of My Soul, as birds flying under Charles Wesley's coat for refuge, storms at sea, and the author fleeing from mob. The truth is that Charles Wesley was simply praising his Maker when, at 31, he wrote this crowning masterpiece. Strangely, John Wesley thought so little of it that he did not include it in his collection, and it did not appear in a hymnal until 9 years after Charles Wesley died. So great a masterpiece is this hymn that Henry Ward Beecher once said of it, I would rather have written that hymn than have all the fame of all the kings that ever sat upon all the earth. Jesus, Lover of My Soul, let me to thy bosom fly. John Keble was born in Fairford, England in 1792. His early education was in his native town under the direction of his father. He entered Oxford University at the age of 15 and remained as a public examiner in the school until 1823. John Keble led a very distinguished and successful life in the religious history of England, sometimes engaged in controversy. He was recognized as one of the great writers of his time, having published a volume of religious poems in 1827. One example of his work is a great hymn that has been sung by people of all faiths, Son of My Soul. Let's listen to this hymn now, done by a group from Birmingham, Alabama.
Son of my soul,
Elizabeth Clephane was born in Melrose, Scotland in 1830. She was a member of the Church of Scotland. We don't have very much information on Miss Clephane, but we want you to hear one of her hymns at this time, the title of which is Beneath the Cross of Jesus. One hymn critic had this to say of Miss Clephane's words: "These lines express the experiences, the hopes, and the longings of a young Christian, written on the very edge of this life, with heaven fully in view by faith. They seem to us to be footsteps in the sands of time, where these sands touch the ocean of eternity. These footprints of one whom God has led through the wilderness into rest may contribute comfort and direction to other followers." While listening to the words of her beautiful hymn, we can readily believe that Elizabeth Clephane truly lived beneath the cross of Jesus.
Beneath the cross of Jesus, I pay would take my stand.
Ida L. Reed was born November the 30th, 1865, in a little hillside home on a sparsely cultivated piece of rocky, rough farmland near Philippi, West Virginia. Ida's life was not a particularly happy one. What with poverty staring her family in the face at every turn, and her own body being ravaged by one disease after another, when she was 15 years old, an epidemic of the worst kind of diphtheria broke out in her section of the West Virginia hills. Those who died were considered more fortunate than those who lived the rest of their lives in semi-blindness and partial invalidism following their long and slow recovery from the dread disease. Ida Reed was one of those who recovered but never forgot that particular epidemic. Her long and slow recuperation was made all the more painful by the untimely death of her father, which threw a great dread of the burden of running the farm as well as assisting with the housework on her tiny shoulders. She never could have made the grave without the sustaining power of her deep and devout Christian faith. Along with hard work, physical disabilities, financial burdens, and heartache, life was very gloomy for Ida Reed. But she read eagerly everything she could lay her hands upon, and secretly dreamed of leaving the narrow confines of her mountain community and going away to college in some romantic place where all her dreams would come true. For three cold and icy winters, when snow covered the ground and mud filled the narrow roadways, Miss Reed fought back the tears and talk in a district school, saving every penny possible for that college education. But the dream was shattered almost before it began. Physicians refused to admit her to college because of the frailty of her health, pronouncing her physically unable to continue her studies. Heartbroken, she wrote, "All the long struggles of the past, with its broken dreams and dead hopes, rose before me. I went down on my face before God, crushed and helpless. And in that black, bitter hour, I seemed to hear a voice comforting me, promising me a greater blessing than that which I'd lost, a fuller life of more blessed service." Miss Reed had tried her hand at writing simple rhymes for her school children to sing to familiar melodies. Now, in her disappointment and pain, she began to write poem after poem. And at the urgent insistence of her brother, she began mailing them out to religious and secular periodicals. To her amazement, requests for more poems began to come in the mail, accompanied by checks for $1 or $2. Very little, but helpful and encouraging to the poor mountain girl. Ida L. Reed lived past the age of 85 and wrote over 2,000 hymns and songs. In addition, she taught herself to play a small organ she bought with some of her royalties. She also corresponded with such people as Ira D. Sankey and Fanny J. Crosby. The following is one of Miss Reed's most beautiful hymns, "Savior, I Come."
Thank you.
Hymn Time is edited, compiled, and originates in Cuthbert, Georgia. Your narrator has been J.C. Yoakum. We hope you have enjoyed the program today. If so, please write or call your local radio station. And now, until we join you again with Hymn Time, may God be with you.
God be with you, can we meet again? Thank you.